From NPR News, it's All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer. Now that the government has ordered more than 100 million doses of Cipro and other antibiotics, federal officials say they'll have enough drugs to treat the victims of any anthrax attack. But they might still have trouble responding if terrorists triggered a contagious outbreak, say, of smallpox. Administration officials are calling for a crash program to make enough smallpox vaccine to protect most people, just to be safe. But a smallpox attack or other contagious outbreak could force the nation's leaders to make difficult choices, as Daniel Swerdling reports for NPR News and American Radio Works.
Suppose that terrorists did release the germs that caused smallpox, and the government didn't have enough vaccines to go around. Earlier this year, a group of influential people tried to figure out just how they'd fight an outbreak in that case. They were taking part in a kind of war game called Dark Winter. They pretended that a worst-case scenario might unfold something like this.
Good evening. We interrupt our regular programming to return to Southwest Medical Center.
This is one of the fictional newscasts that the organizers made, so the training session seemed more real.
Earlier today, hospital officials said they were admitting patients with symptoms that seemed to be severe adult chickenpox. But now we have new information.
To conduct this exercise, more than a dozen top officials and people who used to be officials huddled at Andrews Air Force Base near Washington. These men and one woman had run the CIA and FBI and worked in the White House, one of them as a governor. They were armed with facts and figures about smallpox. They knew how much vaccine is available and how long it takes to make more. And then they imagined that the smock outbreak was really happening.
Smallpox symptoms are being seen in 15 states, also in Canada, Mexico, and England. The U.S. smallpox vaccine supply continues to shrink.
As the officials got caught up in this make-believe crisis, almost all of them said that they were surprised by at least two things. First, the government supply of vaccines was shrinking so fast. And second, the officials couldn't agree which people should get those limited supplies. The mock outbreak showed up first in Oklahoma, and the governor, who played himself, wanted to vaccinate everybody in his state. The man who played president said, "We don't have enough for that. We should vaccinate the most crucial people first."
On day six of the smallpox epidemic, the White House confirmed that federal government officials and military personnel are being vaccinated.
Again, that's a fake newscast. The people who took part in the session came away asking one of the most agonizing questions in public health. If a deadly disease did break out tomorrow, who should get protected first? Tara O'Toole helped design the training session. She's deputy director of the Center for Civilian Biodefense at Johns Hopkins University. She says if top policymakers couldn't agree whom to vaccinate in a fake outbreak, how well would they make these decisions in a real crisis?
In Dark Winter, one participant who's, you know, a former deputy to a cabinet agency said that he was so unfamiliar with issues having to do with immunization and contagious disease that for two-thirds of the Dark Winter exercise, he couldn't really wrap his mind around the questions and so was very tentative in his decision-making. It's very hard. This would be who lives, who dies. And we've never had to deal with those kinds of questions in this country.
Actually, public health specialists have been wrestling with these issues for almost 10 years. Back in the early 1990s, dozens of representatives from federal and state agencies started getting together to figure out how could they fight a national epidemic. But they weren't worried at first about biological warfare. They were planning how to fight the flu. They're not talking about the typical strains of flu that come year after year. They're getting ready for a killer strain that could be even deadlier than smallpox. Starting in 1918, a powerful flu killed tens of millions of people around the world. At least 500,000 died here in the United States in only 6 months. And many health officials predicted that another killer flu is coming, maybe in the not-so-distant future. And they say if it does, they'll face some of the same kinds of problems they'd see in a bioterrorist attack. It'd probably take months to get enough flu vaccines for the whole country. Ray Strickas has been helping coordinate the flu planning group for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He says somebody will have to decide, whom should we help?
That's a momentous choice. Who receives scarce resources to control a disease outbreak first? We've talked about priority groups for influenza vaccination, and that's a very difficult problem.
Another person in this debate is Peter Patriarca. Until a few months ago, he ran the vaccine division of the Food and Drug Administration.
Let me ask you, if someone knocked at your door and said, hello, there's been this exposure and it's almost guaranteed that 5 or 6 out of the 10 people in your family are going to be exposed, and you're asked to make the choice, in essence, whose life is more valuable than someone else's life? Is it you? Is it your youngest child? Is it your parent?
And some health officials wonder, maybe we should protect the elderly first, because in most epidemics, they stand the biggest chance of dying. Others argue the elderly have lived their lives. Society should first protect the children. On the other hand, what if children who get vaccinated survive and their parents who don't get vaccinated die? Some health officials are wondering who'd take care of the orphans. Patriarca says government leaders might have to ask what he calls a cold, calculating question. What kinds of people does the country need most to keep society running?
Think about what might happen in the case of if all the firemen were knocked out, or all the policemen, the military, air traffic controllers, people who are responsible for these gigantic utility grids. Once you start talking about that approach, then you begin to get into debates about who's essential and who isn't. Because I think if you talk to enough people in different fields, they have a perception that whatever they do is essential to the functioning of the community. So these are very difficult things that you have to kind of work through and sort out.
Some officials worry that this issue could be explosive. A few years ago, officials in Maine got together to plan how their state might handle an outbreak. The way one key organizer tells the story, law enforcement people were sitting on one side of the room, doctors and other medical people were on the other, and they literally started shouting at each other. Each side insisted that they should be the first ones to get vaccinated. The participant says it got so tense that they almost started a fist fight, and they never resolved the issue. In the fictitious dark winter training scenario, things got worse.
On day 12 of the worst public health crisis in America's history, demonstrations for more vaccine in hard-hit communities disintegrated into riots and looting around the nation.
Back in the real world, Tara O'Toole at Johns Hopkins says maybe nobody will ever have to decide how to ration vaccines and drugs. She says it'd be comforting not to think about it.
It's very difficult to think about these issues. I mean, it is a burden. It is a worry. I, you know, walk outside and, you know, see clouds and sunlight and wish we could go back to September 10th. On the other hand, I truly believe that it's very important for us to vividly imagine what might happen, because I think it is only through such acts of the imagination that we can do what's necessary to prevent catastrophe.
Federal officials are scrambling now to flex their imaginations. Over the past few days, officials at the CDC have been urgently trying to resolve who should be vaccinated first, so the states will be ready just in case. I'm Daniel Zwerdling for NPR News and American Radio Works.
American Radio Works is the documentary project of NPR News and Minnesota Public Radio.